prayers by the demigods for Lord Krishna in the womb. King Kamsa not only occupied the kingdoms of the Yadu, Bhoja, and Anhaka dynasties and the kingdom of Surasena, but he also made alliances with all other demoniac kings as follows. The demons, Pralamba, Baka, Chinura, Trinavarta, Agasura, Mustika, Arista, Dravida, Putana, Keshi, and Denuka. At that time, Jarasandha was the king of the Magadha province, known at present as Bihar State. Thus, by his diplomatic policy, Kamsa consolidated the most powerful kingdom of his time under the protection of Jarasandha. He made further alliances with such kings as Banasura and Bhomasura until he was the strongest. Then he began to behave most inimically toward the Yadu dynasty, into which Krishna was to take his birth. Being harassed by Kamsa, the kings of the Yadu, Bhoja, and Andhaka dynasties began to take shelter in different states, just as the state of the Kurus, the state of the Panchalas, and the states known as Kaikeya, Shalva, Vidarbha, Nishada, Videha, and Kosala. Kamsa broke the solidarity of the Yadu kingdom, as well as the Bhoja and Andhaka. He made his position the most solid within the vast tract of land known at the time as Bhartvarsha. When Kamsa was killing the six babies of Devaki and Vasudev, one after another, many friends and relatives of Kamsa approached him and requested him to discontinue these heinous acts. But all of them became worshippers of Kamsa. When Devaki became pregnant for the seventh time, a plenary expansion of Krishna known as Ananta appeared within her womb. Devaki was overwhelmed with both jubilation and lamentation. She was joyful, for she could understand that Lord Vishnu had taken shelter within her womb. But at the same time, she was sorry that as soon as her child would come out, Kamsa would kill him. At that time, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, being compassionate upon the Yadus, who were fearful due to the atrocities committed by Kamsa, ordered the appearance of Yogamaya, his internal potency. Krishna is the Lord of the universe, but he is especially the Lord of the Yadu dynasty. Yogamaya is the principal potency of the Personality of Godhead. In the Vedas, it is stated that the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has multipotencies, Parashya Shaktir Vividhaiva Shuyate. All the different potencies are acting externally and internally, and Yogamaya is the chief of all potencies. The Lord ordered the appearance of Yogamaya in the land of Rajabhumi in Vrindavan, which is always decorated and full with beautiful cows. In Vrindavan, Rohini, one of the wives of Vasudev, was residing at the house of King Nanda and Queen Yasoda. Not only Rohini, but many others in the Yadu dynasty were scattered all over the country due to their fear of the atrocities of Kamsa. Some of them were even living in the caves of the mountains. The Lord thus informed Yogamaya, "Under the imprisonment of Kamsa are Devaki and Vasudev, and at the present moment my plenary expansion, Shesha, is within the womb of Devaki. You can arrange the transfer of Shesha from the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini. After this arrangement, I am personally going to appear in the womb of Devaki with my full potencies. Then I shall appear as the son of Devaki and Vasudev, and you shall appear as the daughter of Nanda and Yasoda in Vrindavan. Since you will appear as my contemporary sister, and since you will quickly satisfy the desires for sense gratification, people within the world will worship you with all kinds of valuable presentations, incense, candles, flowers, and offerings of sacrifice. People who are after materialistic perfection will worship you under the different forms of your expansions, which will be named Durga, Bhadrakali, Vijaya, Vaishnavi, Kumuda, Chandika, Krishna, Madhavi, Kanyaka, Maya, Narayani, Ishani, Sharada, and Ambika. Krishna and Yogamaya appeared as brother and sister, the supreme powerful and the supreme power. Although there is no clear distinction between the powerful and the power, power is always subordinate to the powerful. Those who are materialistic are worshippers of the power, but those who are transcendentalists are worshippers of the powerful. Krishna is the supreme powerful, and Durga is the supreme power within the material world. Actually, people in the Vedic culture worship both the powerful and the power. There are many hundreds and thousands of temples of Vishnu and Devi, and sometimes they are worshipped simultaneously. The worshipper of the power, Durga, or the external energy of Krishna, may achieve all kinds of material success very easily. But anyone who wants to be elevated transcendentally must engage in worshipping the powerful in Krishna consciousness. The Lord also declared to Yogamaya, "My plenary expansion, Anantashesh, is within the womb of Devaki. On account of being forcibly attracted to the womb of Rohini, he will be known as Sankarshan and will be the source of all spiritual power, or Bala, by which one can attain the highest bliss of life, which is called Ramana. Therefore, the plenary portion, Ananta, will be known after his appearance either as Sankarshan or as Balaram. In the Upanishads, it is stated, Nayam Atma Bala Hinena Labhya. The purport is that one cannot attain the supreme platform of self-realization without being sufficiently favored by Balaram. Bala does not mean physical strength. No one can attain spiritual perfection by physical strength. One must have the spiritual strength which is infused by Balaram or Sankarshan. Ananta or Shesha is the power which sustains the planets in their different positions. Materially, this sustaining power is known as the law of gravitation, but actually it is a display of the potency of Sankarshan. Balaram or Sankarshan is spiritual power, or the original spiritual master. Therefore, Lord Nityananda Prabhu, who is also the incarnation of Balaram, is the original spiritual master. And the spiritual master is the representative of Balaram, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who supplies spiritual strength. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is confirmed that the spiritual master is the manifestation of the mercy of Krishna. Thus ordered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Yogamaya circumambulated the Lord and then appeared within this material world according to his order. When Yogamaya, the supreme power of the supremely powerful personality of Godhead, transferred Lord Shesha from the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini, both Devaki and Rohini were under Yogamaya's spell, which is called Yoga Nidra. When this was done, people thought that Devaki's seventh pregnancy had been a miscarriage. Thus, although Balaram appeared as the son of Devaki, he was transferred to the womb of Rohini to appear as her son. After this arrangement, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, who is always ready to protect his unalloyed devotees, entered within the mind of Vasudeva as the Lord of the whole creation. With full and conceivable potencies, it is understood in this connection that Lord Krishna first of all situated himself It is understood in this connection that Lord Krishna first of all situated himself in the unalloyed heart of Vasudeva and was then transferred to the heart of Devaki. He was not put into the womb of Devaki by seminal discharge. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, by his inconceivable potency, can appear in any way. It is not necessary for him to appear in the ordinary way, by seminal injection within the womb of a woman. When Vasudeva was sustaining the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead within his heart, he appeared just like the glowing sun, whose shining rays are always unbearable and scorching to the common man. The form of the Lord situated in the pure, unalloyed heart of Vasudeva is not different from the original form of Krishna. The appearance of the form of Krishna anywhere, and specifically within the heart, is called Dham. Dham refers not only to Krishna's form, but also to his name, his qualities, and his paraphernalia. Everything becomes manifest simultaneously. Thus, the eternal form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead with full potencies was transferred from the mind of Vasudeva to the mind of Devaki, exactly as the setting sun's rays are transferred to the full rising, to the full moon rising in the east. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, thus entered the body of Devaki from the body of Vasudeva, being subject to any. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, thus entered the body of Devaki and the body of Vasudeva without being subject to any of the conditions of an ordinary living entity. Since Krishna was there, it is to be understood that all his plenary expansions, such as Narayan and the incarnations like Lord Nrisimha and Varaha, were with him. And they also were not subject to the conditions of material existence. In this way, Devaki became the residence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is one without a second and the cause of all creation. Devaki became the residence of the Absolute Truth, but because she was confined within the house of Kamsa, she looked just like a suppressed fire or like misused education. When fire is kept in a jug, the illuminating rays of the fire cannot be very much appreciated. Similarly, misused knowledge, which does not benefit the people in general, is not very much appreciated. So Devaki was kept within the prison walls of Kamsa's palace, and no one could see her transcendental beauty, which resulted from her conceiving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Kamsa, however, saw the transcendental beauty of his sister Devaki, and he at once concluded that the Supreme Personality of Godhead had taken shelter in her womb. She had never before looked so wonderfully beautiful. He could distinctly understand that there was something wonderful within the womb of Devaki. In this way, Kamsa became perturbed because he was sure that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who would kill him in the future, had now come. Kamsa began to think, what is to be done with Devaki? Surely she has Vishnu or Krishna within her womb. So it is certain that Krishna has come to execute the mission of the demigods. And even if I immediately killed Devaki, his mission cannot be frustrated. Kamsa knew very well that no one can frustrate the purpose of Vishnu. Any intelligent man can understand that the laws of God cannot be violated. His purpose will be served in spite of all impediments offered by the demons. Kamsa thought, if I kill Devaki at the present moment, Vishnu will enforce his supreme will more vehemently. To kill Devaki just now would be a most abominable act. No one desires to kill his reputation, even in an awkward situation. If I kill Devaki now, my reputation will be spoiled. Devaki is a woman, and she is under my shelter. She is pregnant. And if I kill her immediately, my reputation, the results of my pious activities, and my duration of life will all be finished. He further deliberated, a person who is too cruel is as good as dead, even in this lifetime. No one likes a cruel person during his lifetime, and after his death, people curse him. On account of his self-identification with the body, he must be degraded and pushed into the darkest region of hell. Kamsa thus meditated on all the pros and cons of killing Devaki at that time. Kamsa finally decided not to kill Devaki right away, but to wait for the inevitable future. But his mind became absorbed in animosity against the personality of Godhead. He patiently waited for the delivery of the child, expecting to kill him, as he had done previously with the other babies of Devaki. Thus he merged in the ocean of animosity against the personality of Godhead. Did I read that right? Thus being merged in the ocean of animosity against the personality of Godhead, he began to think of Krishna or Vishnu while sitting, while sleeping, while walking, while eating, while working, in all situations of his life. His mind became so much absorbed with the thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that indirectly he could see only Krishna or Vishnu around him. Unfortunately, although his mind was so absorbed in the thought of Vishnu, he is not recognized as a devotee because he was thinking of Krishna as his enemy. The state of mind of a great devotee is also to be always absorbed in Krishna, but a devotee thinks of him favorably, not unfavorably. To think of Krishna favorably is Krishna consciousness, but to think of Krishna unfavorably is not Krishna consciousness. At this time, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, accompanied by great sages like Narada and followed by many other demigods, invisibly appeared in the house of Kamsa. They began to pray to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and select verses which are very pleasing to the devotees and which award fulfillment of their desires. The first words they spoke acclaimed that the Lord is true to his vow. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna descends to this material world just to protect the pious and destroy the impious. That is his vow. The demigods could understand that the Lord had taken his residence within the womb of Devaki to fulfill his vow, and they were very glad that the Lord was appearing in order to fulfill his mission. Then the demigods addressed the Lord as Satyam Param, or the Supreme Absolute Truth. Everyone is searching after the truth. That is the philosophical way of life. The demigods give information that the Supreme Absolute Truth is Krishna. One who becomes fully Krishna conscious can attain the absolute truth, period. Krishna is the absolute truth because, unlike relative truth, he is truth in all three phases of eternal time. Time is divided into past, present, and future. Krishna is truth always, past, present, and future. In the material world, everything is being controlled by supreme time. In the course of past, present, and future, period. Sorry. But before the creation, Krishna was existing. And when there is creation, everything is resting in Krishna. And when this creation is finished, Krishna will remain. Therefore, he is the absolute truth in all circumstances. If there is any truth within this material world, it emanates from the supreme truth, Krishna. If there is any opulence within this material world, the cause of the opulence is Krishna. If there is any reputation within this material world, the cause of the reputation is Krishna. If there is any strength within this material world, the cause of such strength is Krishna. If there is any wisdom and education within this material world, the cause of such wisdom and education is Krishna. Therefore, Krishna is the source of all relative truths. This material world is composed of five principal elements: earth, water, fire, air, and ether. And all such elements are emanations from Krishna. The material scientists accept these primary five elements as the cause of the material manifestation. But the elements in their gross and subtle states are produced by Krishna. The living entities who are working within this material world are products of his material potency. In the seventh chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly stated that the whole manifestation is a combination of two kinds of energies of Krishna, the superior energy and the inferior energy. The living entities are the superior energy, and the dead material elements are his inferior energy. In its dormant stage, everything remains in Krishna. The demigods continue to offer their respectful prayers unto the supreme form of the personality of Godhead, Krishna. The demigods continue to offer their respectful prayers unto the supreme form of the personality of Godhead Krishna by analytical study of the material manifestation. What is this material manifestation? It is just like a tree. A tree stands on the ground. It's just like a tree. A tree stands on the ground, period. Similarly, the tree of the material manifestation is standing on the ground of material nature. The material manifestation is compared to a tree because a tree is ultimately cut off in due course of time. A tree is called vriksha. Vriksha means that thing which will be ultimately cut off. Therefore, this tree of the material manifestation cannot be accepted as the ultimate truth, because it is influenced by time. But Krishna's body is eternal. He existed before the material manifestation. He is existing while the material manifestation is continuing. And when it will be dissolved, he will continue to exist. Therefore, only Krishna can be accepted as the absolute truth. The Katha Upanishad also cites this example of the tree of the material manifestation standing on the ground of material nature. This tree has two kinds of fruits, distress and happiness. Those who are living in the tree of the body are just like two birds. Okay. One bird is the localized aspect of Krishna known as the Paramatma, and the other bird is the living entity. The living entity is eating the fruits of this material manifestation. Sometimes he eats the fruit of happiness, and sometimes he eats the fruit of distress. But the other bird is not interested in eating the fruit of distress or happiness because he is self-satisfied. The Katha Upanishad states that one bird on the tree of the body is eating the fruits and the other bird is simply witnessing. The roots of this tree extend in three directions. This means that the root of the tree is the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Just as the tree's root expands, so by association of the modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, one expands his duration of material existence. The tastes of the fruits are of four kinds: religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and ultimately liberation. According to the different associations in the three modes of material nature, the living entities are tasting different kinds of religiosity, different kinds of economic development, different kinds of sense gratification, and different kinds of liberation. Practically, all material work is performed in ignorance. But because there are three qualities, sometimes the quality of ignorance is covered with goodness or passion. The taste of these material fruits is accepted through five senses. The five sense organs through which knowledge is acquired are subjected to six kinds of whips: lamentation, illusion, infirmity, death, hunger, and thirst. This material body, or the material manifestation, is covered by seven layers: skin, flesh, blood, marrow, bone, fat, and semen. The branches of the tree are eight: earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego. There are nine gates in this body: the two eyes, two nostrils, two ears, one mouth, one genital, one rectum. And there are 10 kinds of internal air passing within the body: prana, apana, udana, vyana, samana, etc. These two birds seated in this tree are explained above. These two birds seated in this tree, as explained above, are the living entity and the localized Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what's going on here? This is the demigods continuing to pray. And as is mentioned, by analytical study of the material manifestation. So that's what we're hearing. Okay, the root cause of the material manifestation described here is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead expands himself to take charge of the three qualities of the material world. Vishnu takes charge of the mode of goodness. Brahma takes charge of the mode of passion, and Lord Shiva takes charge of the mode of ignorance. Brahma, by the mode of passion, creates this manifestation. Lord Vishnu maintains this manifestation by the mode of goodness, and Lord Shiva annihilates it by the mode of ignorance. The whole creation ultimately rests in the Supreme Lord. He is the cause of creation, maintenance, and dissolution. And when the whole manifestation is dissolved in its subtle form as the Supreme Lord's energy, it rests within his body. At present, the demigod prayed, the Supreme Lord Krishna is appearing just for the maintenance of this material, so just for the maintenance of this manifestation. Actually, the Supreme Cause is one, but less intelligent persons being deluded by the three modes of material nature, see that the material world is manifested through different causes. Those who are intelligent can see that the cause is one, Krishna. As it is stated in the Brahma Samhita, Ishvara Parama Krishna Sarva Karana Karanam, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the cause of all causes. Brahma is the deputed agent for creation. Vishnu is the expansion of Krishna for maintenance. And Lord Shiva is the expansion of Krishna for dissolution. Our dear Lord, the demigods pray, it is very difficult to understand your eternal form or personality. People in general are unable to understand your actual form. Therefore, you are personally descending to exhibit your original eternal form. Somehow people can understand the different incarnations of your lordship, but they are puzzled to understand the eternal form of Krishna with two hands, moving among human beings exactly like one of them. This eternal form of your lordship gives ever-increasing transcendental pleasure to the devotees. But for the non-devotees, this form is very dangerous. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is very pleasing to the sadhus, paritranaya sadhunam, but this form is very dangerous for the demons because Krishna also descends to kill the demons. He is therefore simultaneously pleasing to the devotees and dangerous to the demons. Our dear lotus-eyed Lord, you are the source of pure goodness. There are many great sages who simply by samadhi or transcendentally meditating upon your lotus feet and thus being absorbed in your thought have easily transformed the great ocean of nations created by the material nature into no more than the water in a calf's hoof print. The purpose of meditation is to focus the mind upon the personality of Godhead, beginning from his lotus feet. Simply by meditation on the lotus feet of the Lord, great sages cross over this vast ocean of material existence without difficulty. Quote again, O self-illuminated one, the great saintly persons who have covered over the ocean of nations, crossed over the oceans, let me read again. O self-illuminated one, the great saintly persons who have crossed over the ocean of nations by the help of the transcendental boat of your lotus feet have not taken away that boat. It is still lying on this side. End quote. If one takes a boat to cross over a river, the boat also goes with one to the other side of the river. And so when one reaches the destination, how can the same boat be available to those who are still on this side? To those who are still on this side. Yeah. To answer this difficulty, the demigods say in their prayer that the boat of the Lord's lotus feet is not taken away. The devotees still remaining on this side are able to pass over the ocean of material nature because the pure devotees do not take the boat with them when they cross over. When one simply approaches the boat, the whole ocean of material nations is reduced to the size of the water in a calf's hoof print. Therefore, the devotees do not need to take the boat to the other side. They simply cross the ocean immediately. Because the great saintly persons are compassionate toward all conditioned souls, the boat is still lying on this side. In other words, one can meditate upon the lotus feet of the Lord at any time, and by so doing, one can cross over the great ocean of material existence. And that's half the chapter, so I'm going to stop there, and tomorrow, dear Lalita, will continue from there. Does anybody have anything that they'd like to say? Any reflections upon what we just heard? Go ahead. Right.
It's pretty cool.
It's kind of like a supernatural boat.
Yeah.
All right. Not an ordinary boat. Oh, one thing that came to my mind when I was reading this, You could be a demon and be quite intelligent. Kamsa, I mean, like, you know, he's, when he was, when we're hearing about how he was thinking, you know, he wasn't some dumb guy. He was like, he was very thoughtful, but he was a demon. And also these demons that Krishna killed, you know, at the beginning of the chapter talks about the demon Baka, the demon Aga, they had all these, you know, how would you say it, fantastic forms, but it sounds like from reading that they, you know, that was a form they assumed, and that they also had like regular old human-like forms too, and they assumed those forms as, you know, part of their attempt to kill Krishna. You know, they weren't, when they, you know, when Baka, Aga, you know, etc., were walking around, they weren't walking around in the form that they were in when they, you know, Krishna encountered them and killed them in the pastimes here. That was something that just kind of occurred to me. Anything else? Anybody? Yeah? Bhakti Emil?
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Rupari Prabhu, for the awesome lecture. The question I have is concerning the transcendental boat, which as a non-devotee comes to the temple and he see the philosophy, someone explaining the philosophy, and he start devotional service. That's the first step. And then can you talk about the transformation of the material ocean once one becomes a devotee and the material ocean transform?
Yeah, sure. In the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, to those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give them the intelligence by which they can come to me. Out of compassion for them, I, dwelling within their heart, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So that phrase there, Krishna's within the heart, and he destroys with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. That's the only way anybody makes any progress, ultimately. In the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, I believe it's in the purport to the third or the fourth text, Prabhupada says, from the very beginning of material, from the lowest point of material existence up till the top point of spiritual realization. It's like he refers to it as the yoga ladder. So everybody's on this ladder. And when you come to the human form of life, you've been given the opportunity to go up the ladder, to progress in spiritual realization. So the whole program is purifying the consciousness. And there's different, Krishna's given us different programs to, you know, as a means to that end, to purify our consciousness. As I mentioned at the beginning of the class, this is one of them. You know, hearing Krishna's pastimes from the authorized Vedic literatures. Another one is chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra without offense. Another one is worshiping the deity, making nice offerings to the deity, dressing the deities nicely, honoring the Lord's prasadam. These are all programs given to us by the spiritual master to help us, you know, progress in spiritual life. I'll give you another one because I got 5 minutes or 4 minutes. I'll share this with you. I was listening to a morning walk, Prabhupada, here in Los Angeles, 1973. He was walking with Sarup Damodar and some other leading disciples. So I'll just read you an excerpt. So Prabhupada goes, Krishna is asking you that you realize me. And the person, conditioned souls, respond, no, I cannot see you. And so he goes, Prabhupada goes, no. Krishna goes, no, why you cannot see? Why don't you see me? Prabhasmi sasi surayo. I am the sunshine. So who is not seeing the sunshine? Why the rascals say, I do not see God? God says, I am here. But he says, I do not see. So Prabhupada goes, liars. If you are in my front, if I say, here I am, if you say, no, sir, I do not see you, what is this? Similarly, God is before you in the form of sunshine. Don't you see the sunshine? Why do you say that I do not see God? Who has not seen the sunshine? In the morning, very early in the morning, you see God. That is the Gayatri Mantra. Om Bho Bhavasva Tat Savitur Varenyam Bhargo Devasya. That is the obeisances to the sun. Savita means sun. In the very beginning, you see God by the sunshine. So Prabhupada says, so why don't you understand that? So why don't you understand God's presence like that? Where is the difficulty? Does it require any big philosophical speculation? The rascal, here's the point. The rascal will not admit, as directed in the Vedic literature, that is their fault. Otherwise, where is the difficulty? No difficulty. It's all these different things. Krishna's giving us so many different ways in which we can appreciate his presence and realize him. Prabhupada's saying, Krishna is asking, you realize me. So Krishna's everywhere. You know, where is Krishna not? You know, the taste of water, the sunshine, everything. And what to speak of when you come to the temple, it's like this is, you know, these courses, they offer sometimes courses in accelerated learning. Have you ever heard of that phrase, accelerated learning? This is accelerated learning. The Krishna consciousness movement is accelerated learning for the human form of life. And the human form of life, you're supposed to, as I said, make progress, fall in love with Krishna. And here, when you come to the Krishna conscious movement, you're entering into the university for accelerated learning of falling in love with Krishna. See, Krishna's everywhere, but he's really here in the Krishna consciousness movement. And this is accelerated learning. The chanting of the Maha Mantra, hearing of the Srimad Bhagavatam, deity worship, preaching like that. This is all techniques for accelerated learning in learning how to fall in love with Krishna, which is the ultimate perfection and goal of life. So I'll stop there. Thank you very much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.